Welcome to the Path to Profit podcast with your hosts, Dr. Manette Riordan and Brad Dobson.
Hi, and welcome again to the Path to Profit podcast. I'm here with my wife, Dr. Manette Riordan. I'm Brad Dobson.
I feel like you always look at me like you got to remember who's sitting beside you.
That's right. Well, yeah, I'm getting older. And we're happy to have our guest today, Brian Pierre-Grossi. Welcome, Brian.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, no, we're excited to have you. Thanks for your time and excited to hear more about your story as well. And to start the show, we always share a quote, as people know. And so I'm actually going to share your quote that you sent as part of your bio, because I think it's really cool and will really frame the context of the conversation and the direction we get to go today. And Brian writes, "When the pillars of my limited mind collapsed, the roof caved in and I could take in the beauty of the stars." Beautiful.
Good stuff.
It's really beautiful. So, Brian, you've accomplished a lot in your lifetime. You're a life coach, author of The Big Glow and The Wow of Now, as well as an internet sensation called Love is the New Religion / Spiritual Conspiracy, which is curious about that / Spiritual Conspiracy there. And you have quite a story to share. And rather than me sharing it, I'd love in your own words for you to share a little bit about your amazing journey of healing and how your journey brought you to this place of really building a thriving business around your life story.
Sure. Well, the way we could start the journey is when I was 20 years old and I had an illness that was later labeled chronic fatigue syndrome, and it was debilitating, and it really changed the course of the direction of my life. I thought, you know, well, just wait, everything's going to go like this. Everything's going to go very easy. And I'm going to and then all of a sudden it was this, you know, just bedridden and in this intense pain and too weak to function and very intense headaches. And I wasn't getting any answers from the medical establishment as far as what was happening with me or how to cure what was happening with me. Although they still wanted to prescribe drugs, which I thought was interesting. So I just started my own path of, I needed to find out for myself, you know, what's going on with me? What's this life? Why am I suffering? Why is there suffering? And who am I and why am I here? And it really started what you could call a spiritual journey or a spiritual search. And that was what led me on a path of self-discovery, a path of self-discovery, which went on for many years. And then maybe about 10 years later, another turning point worth mentioning was I was living what I was calling a divided life, right? So I had this sort of a part-time job that I didn't really like very much. Wasn't really, didn't feel any real passion in it. Was increasingly actually disliking it more and more. And then in my spare time, I would kind of explore things that I was interested in, that I was excited to read certain books or get into certain things or have conversations with people that I was excited and passionate about. And there was this point where one night I just went out, I couldn't really sleep too well. It was sort of this feeling this inside myself, this sort of division inside myself, and went out for a walk and just started walking and walking, and it was raining, and I was just like impervious to the rain, and just throughout the night, just walking, you know, through the rain and just thinking like, I can't do this anymore. I need to really live a life that's like true to me, true to my heart, true to my deepest sense of meaning and purpose and inspiration and the life that I feel called to live and generate my income in doing so. And that feeling was really like a feeling first and foremost, you know, that feeling was what started this next phase of my life. And I think one thing that's important for your listeners or viewers to realize is at that moment, I didn't know how I was going to do it. And I think that's an important point is people think, well, if I know how, then, you know, then everything will be okay. And then I'll make this leap or I'll make this jump. But I didn't know how. You know, I made the commitment first, and then the how I gradually discovered, you know, moment by moment after. And I think for all of us, when we make a big shift in our lives, we never know exactly how, you know, and if we think we know exactly how, it's not going to be exactly how, even if we think we know exactly how. So there's this point of the way I often say it is the how comes second. You know, you make this intention of I'm saying yes to, I'm making commitment to whatever it is, you know, but to something that's true inside your heart. And then the how comes second. So in my case, and I'm not saying it has to be this radical for everybody, it can be more gradual, but I gave my job a 3-week notice. I gave where I was living a 3-week notice that I was leaving, and didn't have anything lined up, you know, afterwards. And that really set me in this motion of really just giving myself completely and fully to this deepest call of my heart, a deepest sense of meaning and purpose, inspiration, and generating income and supporting myself in doing so.
I love that. It's such a beautiful story.
So yeah, it's killer. I think, and to a certain extent, we had some of those same things happen to us, but later in life. Do you think that your journey through illness at a younger age, I call it 20 young.
yeah, I was young.
Do you think that made it easier for you to make that leap of faith because of what you had done for yourself previously? Because I know that personally, you know, I got to 45 and we were trying to get out of a rut, and a big rut, and it just took a lot of energy and heavy lifting to get out of that rut, and rather than just being able to lightly step away from things.
I think embracing the unknown is a big thing. You know, I just noticed someone I've been talking to, someone close to I've been talking with, and she's kind of exploring this entrepreneurial aspect for the first time. And I can see, oh, she's not used to she's used to someone else telling her everything's going to be, you know, when you're an entrepreneur, no one's telling you how it's going to be. Right. So I think the illness for me, I think interesting for me was I had the sense of like, wow, like I thought life was going to be this way and I'm just in the unknown. Like, I don't know. Everything I thought is how it's going to be. It's not going to be. I have to rely on myself. I had this feeling I have to rely on myself. And so I think that shift in consciousness was a really valuable shift at that age to step into what I call like living authentically, you know, which can be in all different areas of your life, but can include your work, your purpose, your business, your entrepreneurship as well.
Well, it must have helped you a ton with your specifically the entrepreneurial journey, not just, you know, the life journey, but I know from stepping out of working in corporate for many years into an entrepreneurial journey, it's a huge head game and
yeah.
a lot of personal improvement. So it must have helped you to have that background, to be able to, you know, go into a role where nobody's telling you what to do. You're your own boss.
Yeah.
Good and bad.
Yeah.
Responsible for everything that comes.
Yeah. 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 And I think some of us are perhaps more wired for that. Like we like life kind of shows us that, you know, like there was a while, like I mentioned in the story earlier, where I was trying to conform to a certain, you know, the way that it was done. And it doesn't feel right inside yourself. And you start to just feel like, deadened inside. It's deadening feeling inside, which it sounds like both of you, you know, had a sense of at some point as well. And you can kind of like suppress that or repress that or drink it away or whatever ways we have of like just suppressing these feelings. Or you can say, or you can say, oh no, there's something here that I need to listen to, you know, that's guiding me in a different direction. Even if I don't know exactly the way, if I say yes to it, you know, the way will reveal itself, and I'll start to learn and research and explore and ask questions, and I'll find out moment by moment, you know, step by step, how to create this new path for myself.
And I love how clear you were about your turning point. It really was a dark night of the soul in
that
moment. And it's sometimes it's just not that dramatic. I think people also need to know it's awesome when it's that clear. And yet I think for Brad and I, it's been sometimes more gradual, right? And it's taken us longer to come out on the other side. But there's almost always, as they say in traditional storytelling, there's always that inciting incident, right? That shifts things. You know, somebody gets sick or someone dies or you get laid off or...
Yeah.
And, yet the way you came out on the other side is what I find really beautiful and fascinating into this place that the truth is in living authentically. So I'd love for you to maybe define that for people, because it's a term that's used a lot right now.
Yeah.
It's popular, and you're really modeling it. So how would you define that for people?
Yeah, that's a great question, because it's actually a very difficult thing to define, right? Yes. Because what does it mean to be authentic? What does it mean to be genuine? You know, what does it mean to be yourself, quote unquote? It's almost like a mystery that you live in. You know, it's almost like a mystery that you live in, like, you know, because you can't, oh, this is how I be authentic. Because if I tell you how I'm going to be authentic, then that's not really being authentic, right? So it's like sort of this thing of like, you're constantly asking yourself the question, you know, what's true to me? What's true to me in this moment? What's true to me in this moment? What's true to me in this moment? You know, what am I feeling right now? What do I really want right now? What do I really desire right now? What am I really thinking right now? What am I really feeling? You know, so it's kind of like, it comes back to the root of a lot of what my work is about being present, you know, and being in the moment. And we can be present in the moment, then we can get in touch with what's authentic inside ourselves. And something else I wanted to add on to that, which relates to business, because I was thinking about this yesterday, I thought it'd be fun to bring up with you guys, is how I think it, when you're more authentic, you form, because I feel like business, everything in life is relationships, right? So you can have husband and wife, father, son, mother, daughter, but you have business relationships too. You have relationships with your clients, relationships with the people that you're doing business with. And I think that when people sense that you're authentic, they trust you more, you know, where if they feel like, oh, this guy's trying to do some kind of scheme, or he's trying to do some kind of ploy to get me, you know, it doesn't. And when I detect that stuff, I'm not interested in engaging with people in a deeper way. So when you can be authentic, find out authenticity in yourself as a human being, then that relates to yourself as in business. And it creates this sense of trust with your customers or your clients, that they feel like, oh, this person's like a real person. I feel like I connect with them, and I trust them, and I can relate to them. And I think that's a really beneficial thing to have in a business or a brand, or, you know, these different aspects of business.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more. And I've watched this so many times, even at the micro level. Manette does a lot of public speaking, and even if there's just one little bit of and it doesn't even have to be a sales pitch. If there's one little bit that maybe she has a mental struggle with, even one sentence, you can hear it. And if you can hear it, then other people can hear it, and they tune into that. I think, especially with speaking, I'm not sure that, or perhaps people undervalue just how much the audience can sense from posture, tone of voice, all of those things outside of the actual words being spoken. So that authenticity flows just from the very smallest level all the way through the business. And you can lose that trust or gain that trust based on, you know, how deeply you feel what it is you're presenting to or trying to sell, or the service you're trying to provide.
And if you really authentically feel like you have something, a product or a service that's going to be beneficial for people, then there's this level of inspiration and passion and purpose. And you feel excited to share that with people in a really genuine way. And I think people can feel that too, yeah, as opposed to like, you know, I don't really care about this product, but I'm trying to maximize my profits, and let me see what I can like trick you into it, you know? Mm-hmm. So it's a whole different thing when you're doing the former instead of the latter, and people I think can feel that.
Yeah, for sure. So tell us a little bit about, you had this transition, you decided to do your own thing, you had no clue about how it was all going to happen. Tell us a little about your journey as an entrepreneur and what's kept you excited and motivated on the path, because it is a journey, right? And it's
yeah,
an overnight sensation, right? It takes time.
Yes. It's an important point. So it wasn't like I made that decision all of a sudden, there's tons of money coming in and offers and things, you know, there's a period of not knowing, of learning, of exploring, of making mistakes, if you want to call them that, and learning from those mistakes, you know, to hit the mark better. So I think it's just a process of trial and error. But also I think it's important not to be afraid to put yourself out there, you know, so for example, I do retreats, and I've been doing them for close to 10 years now. And I started doing retreats, I didn't really know what I was doing, but I felt a sense of passion to do it. you know, and in the beginning, it was just like gathering a few friends together. Hey, come on, please come out to this, this place and let's hang out for a few days.
Yeah.
So that's other things, wherever you can start, just to start. And as you go, you learn more and you grow and you expand. And if you really feel like what you're doing is like, as I said, on purpose and making a positive difference in people's life, it gives you the energy to keep going and putting yourself out there and then you know, people respond and just trusting that the right people will be aware of what you're doing and connect and there'll be synchronistic benefits from there.
Yeah, I love that. Go ahead. Lots of questions.
So one of the things that we see a lot with our clients and people that we talk to, they don't have that built-in ability to trust themselves and to go out and fail. And I'm sure you see this a lot. And so just the words coming out of your mouth, you know, you had that self-confidence and maybe some of that was your journey through health issues.
And you've been doing it for 10 years.
Yeah. Maybe it's just part of who you are. But so I know that there's some people out there that are thinking, well, yeah, easier said than done. You know, this guy he was able to just start. And well, I can't do that. I don't have the self-confidence. I assume you see that struggle with people too.
Mm. Well, what's coming up for me and you saying that is interesting is, put yourself out there and take a chance, make mistakes, but also it's like, don't be stupid, right? Like calculated risk, you know? So you kind of try to assess like, okay, like if I'm not sure if this is going to work out, but it could. You know, but if I take it this far, then I could really put myself in a situation that's just like, you know, collapses the whole thing. So it doesn't, it's like this combination of, yes, taking risks and having courage and taking chances and kind of going a little bit beyond, you know, your comfort zone, but finding that balance when you set goals, when you set this place of it's not doing something that is foolish either. Right. So it's an interesting balance of, you know, we don't always know what that is. Right. That's where we try to find out what's that balance between those two poles. But I think the people that are very successful in business, they learn to find that balance and be in that space, you know, as best they can.
I love that because it's that tension is where the magic happens. Right.
Yeah.
It is a lot of trial and error. And right now it's really popular to talk about failing forward and the faster you fail, the faster you move. And and yet was it Edison that says there's not failing. It's just every time you're learning new lessons. So like all these little cliches are out there about what it takes to really be successful. And yet what I hear you saying is it's like, take calculated risks. Yes, you have to put yourself out there, but don't set yourself up for failure either. Like stretch just beyond the edge of your comfort zone and the next time stretch a little further. So do you support people through that process of growth? Because as Brad said earlier, we find that the entrepreneurial journey, and I've been an entrepreneur for 15 years, more than anything, it's an inner journey.
Right? Yeah.
There's a lot of outer action that has to happen.
Yeah.
But I think it has to happen internally before it can happen externally.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like being courageous and being inspired and, you know, not being afraid to make mistakes, but also like, for example, today someone was offering me a space to do a retreat and it seemed like a beautiful place, but it seemed like the price, the investment, financial investment, didn't seem like it was necessarily worth, it was too risky essentially. Right. So I was like, yeah, take risks, but don't be intelligent too. Like, you know, that you can find something it wasn't an absolute no to this offer, but there's a possibility of finding something that may be a more wise investment that doesn't have to be as much. And there'll be more in return, you know, from that place. So it's like being able to follow your heart, but also use your head, right. Have both of those things together.
And speaking of using your heart and your head, I know one of the things that you talk about is as you've gone on this entrepreneurial journey, which is probably mirrored, not just getting healthy, but staying healthy. How do you manage all of that? I hear that so much from our clients is how to manage time, how to not get stressed out, right? How do I make time for the mindfulness practice, the exercise practice, the eating healthy practice, and then I got to go make sales too.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a big question. That's something that I'm continuing to look at, time management. So it's a big one. And then especially if you have children or you have family or you have, you know, these things that we have. And so But one thing we were talking about before we started was the exercise, you know, is really valuable, and mindfulness practices and spiritual practices. I think that those things, if you make time for those, make a commitment to those, they're actually going to make your time more quality and or more quantity as opposed to less. So I think those things are really valuable to have as a part of your overall day and week. And it's interesting. I remember reading this. It was actually in Tim Ferriss's book. And he was in this meeting with Richard Branson. And
that's Manette's hero.
So they're asking, what's the most important thing that makes you a successful, what was the question? It was a question related to what's one of the most important things about your life or who you are that makes you so successful in business. I'll have to look at the exact frame of the question, but basically he surprised everyone. He said, exercise is one of the most important things for him. Cause it, you know, maintains his energy level, reduces the stress level, and just keeps him, you know, be able to have a vehicle that allows him to be, at optimal space to function in business. So I really think that, you know, there can be this idea that, oh, I don't have time to take care of myself. I don't have time for self-care, but that's actually fundamental to being successful in business. And if you neglect that over a period of time, you know, you'll feel the effects in all the aspects of your life, including business.
Yeah, I love that. I think that's so clear.
Yeah.
And it's certainly been part of our, you know, personal journey and growing and awareness. And so this question just keeps coming up and I just feel called to ask. I'm curious who some of your favorite mentors and who were the people that you followed, admired, or studied with along the path?
As far as like the business?
Could be business or personal. I just, yeah.
Yeah, Tim Ferriss, I just mentioned some of his stuff was helpful to me. Tony Robbins, probably a lot of the people that, you know, kind of the people are familiar with. I think if there's somebody that's unusual or kind of like cutting edge or off the cuff. But I also think like the spiritual realm or people that deal in consciousness, you know, those areas are really important too, because they really help you to access everything we're talking about, this living
That's
authentically.
Too.
Yeah. Yeah. This living authentically, this getting in touch with your purpose, you know, and they may not be necessarily seen as like business coaches or business people, but you'll feel the positive effects, in all the areas of your life, which including business or your purpose and you know, generating financial abundance and all these different areas as well.
You mentioned mindfulness practices. Do you have some specific ones that you bring to your life and your business?
Yeah, and that's part of my work as well. That's a lot of part of what I do with the retreats and the workshops I do. So meditation, you know, which the traditional sort of meditation of, you know, being still and being quiet and, you know, being in one space for 20 minutes, 30 minutes is great. But also what I'm feeling even more passionate about is sort of embodiment mindfulness practices. That bring in movement, mindfulness, walking, dance. Even I consider even working out can be a form of mindfulness meditation. I think what you do with the Ironman work, you have to be in the moment, you know, right, to get through that. So yeah. I think there's a lot of things that we can bring in the sense of mindfulness that we don't necessarily think of that can be, and we bring full presence to what we're doing, and it can engage the body, it can engage these different aspects of ourselves in a holistic way.
Yeah, it's so true. It's how I feel about art, about making art.
And art for sure. Yeah, art as well.
Being in that moment. So I'm really curious, you keep mentioning retreats. So tell us a little bit more about your retreats. I know you've got some stuff coming up this fall, and then some, at least one retreat coming up really soon, right?
Yeah, September 9th and 10th in Asheville. The Big Low Retreat, the four levels of intimacy. It's rooted in mindfulness. It's rooted in being present, and the positive benefits it has in all these areas of our life. You know, we think of intimacy as just relationship, romantic, sexual, which is certainly a component, but really being intimate with the moment, being intimate with yourself, being intimate with your own thoughts, with your own feelings. You know, like if you can't be intimate with yourself, how can you be intimate with another person? Right. So that'd be interesting for you guys, maybe since you're both here together, could you reflect on that yourselves? But, you know, people think it's, oh, if I meet this person, then they'll make me happy and everything will be okay. But no, if you don't have this connection inside yourself, then that's the primary element, or, you know, connection with what you call source or God or this higher element, you know, these areas, and then you can have intimacy with another and with others in your life. And the benefits, you know, spill out from there.
I saw that on your website, and I thought it was so insightful that intimacy is the one thing that we both long for yeah. the most and fear the most yeah. at the same time. And that journey to be intimate with the self often is harder than the journey to be intimate with someone else, right? It's you know, it's old-fashioned maps always used to have around the edges of maps, there'd be dragons here, right? Mm-hmm. You know, when the map maker didn't know what was beyond, they would just say there's dragons. And it feels like that internal mapping process is like that. There's dragons in there, right? And of course, everybody's talking about dragons right now because of Game of Thrones, right? So, and I'm a little obsessed with dragons, I'll just say that. And, but that sense of, it's scary what you're going to find in there, right? And so at the retreat, I'm sure, is it a combination of sort of embodied practices as well as lectures, and what's a little
bit? Yeah, it's a really holistic, I'm interested in having holistic experience. So mind, body, spirit, experiential, you know, having space for dialogue and conversation. And I really like the point that you made. And what I find interesting is that these parts of ourselves that are shadow or dragons that we're afraid to look at, what happens is we'll project that outward, and then we don't like this person, you know, we don't like that person, but really we don't like the person because they're an aspect of ourselves that we don't like.
Yeah.
You know, we learn to integrate that, or and we can project it onto our partner too. We don't like this part of them, but we don't like that part of ourselves. Yeah. You know, we can integrate that part and come to learn, love and embrace that part of ourselves, and we can be at peace with the outer world. Once we're at peace with.
Yeah, we've never done that.
No. You know, I learned
25 years, never done that.
Yeah, I learned a lot about that through Debbie Ford's book.
Dark Side of the Light Chasers.
Dark Side of the Light Chasers.
Yeah,
that's
a great book.
So I'm interested, having done a lot of this journey myself, maybe in the last 8 years or so, I'm about to turn 50. It was tough. I had a lot of scar tissue built up around and things hidden in my head and all that type of stuff from hiding or you know, preventing myself from thinking about those things. Do you find at your workshops that you have younger people that are able to do this a little, integrate these things a little faster, or does it than the older people in the room, or does it depend on just the whatever trauma they've been through, or is everybody's journey different?
I think everyone's journey is different, but I think it's a good, I think I like what you're saying though, because like some people think like with my retreats or things like mine that, oh, I have to be happy to be there. It's about being happy and being in the space. If I'm not happy, then I shouldn't go to this thing. But again, it's really about authenticity. And I feel like it's whatever you're feeling, whatever you're experiencing, if we can just welcome and embrace that and not think, oh, I have to be happy to be enlightened. But if you can embrace whatever emotions are arising, whatever feelings are arising, paradoxically, there's sort of a transcendent quality that emerges. And it's actually when we resist what we're feeling or resist what we're thinking or resist what's happening inside us that we get stuck in it, you know, and it becomes this thing that's like we're carrying around. So when we can actually embrace what we're feeling without labeling as good or bad, but just be with it, or with another, with our partner, same thing. If we can embrace what they're feeling without labeling as good or bad, but just be with it, then something transcendent is able to emerge, and we get in, realize a deeper sense of what love, you know, really is, starting with love of ourselves and then be able to love another.
Yeah. Yeah. It's my favorite meditation is the metta, right? Just the loving kindness has to start here. It's such an important part of that whole process with love the self first. Right. So I love the journey that you're on. I love what you're teaching and what you stand for. And you clearly practice what you preach, which is always such an important, I think, part of the journey is what really lends itself to that authenticity and that instant credibility, right? You know, people always want to say, I want to be an expert. I want to be an authority. And
right.
You have to walk your talk first, right? I mean, you have to put in the time.
Yeah. Yeah. And there's this interesting thing that I think there's an interesting thing emerging too. For sure, it's great to have somebody that's an expert and has some it feels like they're living what they're talking about. But I'm noticing there's more like in the field that I'm in, more vulnerability mm-hmm. that's happening, where people are sharing more kind of, you know, their challenges or, you know, their humanness.
Yeah.
You know, And that's that authenticity that creates a people, oh, I can relate to this person, you know? Yeah. So yes, to be an expert, but you don't have to be someone that's unhuman, you know?
Right.
So it's the authenticity of having confidence of where you're at, but also being relatable to the people that you're connecting with as well.
Yeah. It's been fun, I think, over the last decade to see the change in the speaker industry from yes. that authority expert model of just talking at the yeah. audience to really being in relationship with the audience. It's been beautiful to watch some of those changes, even in speakers like Tony Robbins, right? Who's been doing yeah. it for forever, but to see that change, and thanks to Brené Brown for making vulnerability a household word, right? And really, I think giving us all permission to have those conversations in a very public way, right? And knowing when to share them, not oversharing either, right? I know sure. clients said it's like, if you're not past the journey, don't share it in a way that's going to deposition you either. And it's like, you want to yeah. be authentic and vulnerable, but you don't want to be, you know, crying with everyone in the room.
Right.
You know, so there's that, it's such a fine balance to hold that space for people, because as leaders, as you know, we also host our own workshops, but as leaders, you have to be able to hold that space for everybody in the room and be the one that's, you know, holding it together and not falling apart at the front of the room. And so being able to do that in a way, and you've been doing it long enough, I'm sure you're really good at it at this point. You have lovely energy, and I'm sure you hold that space beautifully for everybody. And yet you still have a powerful journey to share, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I like what you're saying. You know, I think what's valuable is to feel, that people can relate to you.
Yeah.
You know, and if there's some kind of story or something, hey, I've experienced this before in my life too. You know, I understand where you're coming from, and here's how I can be helpful to you.
Yeah.
Right. So those two things, not like, oh, you know, yeah, this sucks and that's it, you know, but like, yes, I understand. And here's how we can, like, you know, and I was thinking as you're saying, I think what's made a shift in, this increasing level of vulnerability with, leaders or whatever you want to call them, inspirational speaking, I think women being more, in the field, they bring a different quality where there's more vulnerability. There's more kind of interconnection that's brought this other energy in. That's been a nice balancing energy.
Yeah. What the Dalai Lama say, the Western woman is going to save the world, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I love that. So tell us a little bit about, so you have retreats coming up. What else are you working on? What would you like people to know about, and how can they connect with you?
Yeah, the retreat is September 9th and the 10th. I also do personal coaching sessions. So if that interests anybody, they can contact me. They can contact me through my website, which is thebigglow.com, thebigglow.com, or email, same thing, thebigglow@gmail.com. And I'm also active on kind of the usual suspects, Instagram and Facebook and sure. Twitter and YouTube and those places as well.
Which is your favorite?
Which is my favorite? That's a good question. I've been liking Instagram more. But I would say I'm still the most active on Facebook.
Yeah. I would say the same thing. I've become an Instagram junkie. I'm like, I love pouring through the feed, and especially from an art perspective, right? I really appreciate what people are putting out there. But all my clients are on Facebook, so I'm still pretty active on Facebook as well.
Yeah.
Cool. And all your books are available on Amazon?
Yes.
Awesome.
Good stuff. Yes. We'll have links to those on the show.
Yeah, we'll make
notes
sure we put too. Links to everything in the show notes. And are you still have spaces in your upcoming?
Yes, I do. Yep.
Okay. Awesome. Very cool. And are those small, pretty intimate, or they're?
It's going to be a pretty intimate one. Yeah. There'll be a chance for the interconnection and people to all know each other's names and
yeah. Nice. And I asked that because it's something I had someone ask me. I was speaking last week down in LA at an event. And we have an event called Dream Design Profit coming up at the end of September. And she's like, well, how many people are going to be there? And I said, you know, maybe 30 at the most. And she's like, it was like this huge physical relief, right? Because when you're in rooms full of hundreds of people, you don't get to meet the speaker. You don't get to have that kind of connection and interaction with everybody in the room. So knowing that your audience and the type of work you're doing is probably looking and longing for more of that intimate connection with the other participants.
Yeah. Yeah.
Awesome.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Fun well, Brian, stuff. Thank you.
This
amazing,
was a blast, Brian.
Amazing stuff. I love the work that you're up to, and we wish you nothing but continued success.
Thank you both so much for having me.
And I'm Minette. This is Brad. We're the Path to Profit podcast, where we bring you tips, strategies, insights from other entrepreneurs who are on that path to profit and figuring out how to stay there. And we want to inspire you to stay there as well. And we'll see you soon.
Bye, guys.
Thanks for listening.